The line of poachers was swinging out to flank the elephant, not heading directly towards him, but keeping well below the wind, so that a fluke of the breeze would not carry their scent to him. Despite this detour, they were running hard and gaining on him swiftly. The bull was still totally unaware of their existence, heading with long, swaying strides down towards the river bed. At this rate, Sean realized that they would intercept him and open fire before he reached it. The government directive from the game department to the concessionaires was in plain language. Unauthorized armed men in a hunting concession, if apprehended in what was clearly a hunting operation, were presumed to be poachers. 4 game department rangers and 1 concessionaire had been murdered by poachers during the past 4 years, and the directive was that fire could be opened on poachers without warning. The Prime Minister, Robert Mugabe, had made it even plainer. "Shoot to kill," were his exact words. The .577 Nitro Express was a devastating weapon at close quarters, but over 100 yards, the heavy bullet dropped away rapidly. The group of poachers was 600 yards away across the valley floor, and Sean jumped up and, crouching low, slipped across the face of the slope to where Job was lying behind a fallen tree trunk. He dropped down beside him. "Give me the Weatherby," he ordered, and took the lighter weapon from his hands. Job was an excellent shot, but this called for Bisley standard marksmanship. Sean jerked the bolt open and checked that there was a cartridge in the chamber. It was a 180-grain nozzler, and Sean tried to estimate how much the bullet would drop over the range of 600 yards, firing downhill with a slight breeze on his left shoulder. He remembered from the ballistics table that the bullet drop at 350 yards would be 6 inches. At 600 yards, it would probably be 4 foot or more. While he worked it out, he stripped off his shirt, rolled it into a bundle, and placed it on the fallen tree trunk behind which he and Job were crouched. "Back me with a big bandooki. Shoot very high with it," he told Job, and settled behind the tree trunk, resting the fore end of the Weatherby on the pad of the shirt. He screwed the variable telescopic lens to full power and gazed through it. He picked up the heads of the file of poachers. With this magnification, he could recognize 2 of the men, as Matatu had described them from their spoor. The tall, lean one was leading, and he wore a blue denim jacket, traditional guerrilla uniform from the days of the Bush War. Behind him came the shorter, heavier man. He had a tiger-striped camouflage cap on his head and wore a plain khaki shirt. Beyond them, Sean could see the elephant. The magnification of the lens foreshortened the range, so that the poachers seemed very close to their quarry. Even as he watched them, the leader of the column unslung the automatic rifle from his shoulder and made a gesture with his other hand. Behind him, the other 3 poachers fanned out into a skirmishing line and slipped their rifles off their shoulders, holding them at high port. Sean snuggled down behind the Weatherby, digging in his heels, regulating his breathing, his forefinger resting lightly on the trigger. He picked out the tall leader in the denim jacket and let the crosshairs of the telescopic sights drift over the man's head. The image wavered and quivered in the heat, and Sean watched the watery lines of mirage, for they were indicators of the strength and direction of the breeze. When they leaned over, the breeze was gusting, but they rose straight upwards like smoke in the lulls between gusts. He drew a deep breath, let half of it out, and held the rest. The mirage steadied in a lull, and he took his aim, a full body length above the poacher's head. The image looked good, but he did not pull the trigger. He squeezed the grip of the rifle with his whole hand as though he were modelling clay. The butt plate slammed back into his shoulder as the barrel jumped high in the typically vicious Weatherby recoil, and he lost sight of the target. Before he could recollect himself, Job exulted, "Shail! A hit!" And when Sean brought the lens back, there were only 3 heads showing above the grass. All three poachers had turned and were firing their weapons backwards towards the slope, where Sean and Job were hidden, blazing wildly on fully automatic, their AKs beating like the rattle of kettle drums. Beyond them, Sean saw the old bull elephant in full flight, his ears streaming back and his great black tusks lifted high above the grass. He crashed into the narrow ribbon of dark bush and out the other side. "Run, my beauty," Sean breathed. "If I can't have you, nobody else will." And he turned his full attention back to the band of poachers. They were a crack unit. That was immediately obvious. Two of them were throwing covering fire at the koppie, while the third had run to where the leader had gone down in the grass and dragged him to his feet. The blue, denim-clad leader had lost his rifle, and he was doubled up and clutching his side. "Nicked him," Sean muttered, and fired again. He saw dust fly above the grass as his bullet fell close beside him. The poachers began to pull out, dragging their leader with them, placing an anthill between them and the koppie. Both Sean and Job were firing deliberately, but the range was increasing every second, and although Sean saw dust fly very close to the scurrying figures, they could not claim another hit before the band disappeared into the grass and scrub, and the clatter of automatic fire dwindled into silence. Sean and Job waited 15 minutes, peering down into the valley, but they did not get another glimpse of them before Sean stood up. "We go take a look." "Careful," Job warned. "They could have doubled back to lay an ambush." That was another old guerrilla trick, and they went down the slope cautiously. Matatu led them to where the poacher had fallen. It was an area of flattened grass. The man's weapon had disappeared. One of the other poachers must have retrieved it. Matatu picked up one of the grass stems and held it out to Sean. The blood on it was almost dry. However, the bleeding had not been profuse, and they found less than a dozen droplets on the grass or balled on the dry earth. "Flesh wound," grunted Sean. The drift of the breeze must have pushed the bullet off the vital areas of the man's body. "Who do we follow? To Kutila or the poachers?" Job wanted to know.
"The poachers will be halfway back to Lusaka by now," Sean grinned. "Follow the elephant," he ordered Matatu.
They tracked Tukutila across the river bed and up the farther side of the valley. After his first panicked rush, the old bull settled down into that swinging stride that ate up the ground at a prodigious rate, and which he could keep up for days. He was boring away towards the east, towards the Mozambique border, only deviating slightly from his course to take a gap in a line of hills or to climb the easier gradient when there was no pass. They ran hard on his spoor. Not having to take precaution against ambush, they could push themselves to the limits, but the elephant was pulling away from them, and the day was wasting. The sun was casting their own long shadows ahead of them. There was no defined border with Mozambique, no fence or cut line through the forest, but a sixth sense warned Sean that they had crossed. He was about to give orders to halt when Job whistled softly and made a cut-out signal with his left hand. Matatu pulled up and shook his head in agreement, and the three of them bunched up and stood looking along the faint spoor which ran ahead of them into the darkening eastern forest.
"Mozambique," Job said. "He's got away."
And the others did not deny it.
"He still goes fast," Matatu spat on the spoor. "Faster than any man can run. We will not see Tukutila again this year."
"Yes, but there will be another season," Sean said. "Next year he will range across into the national park and come again in the new moon across the Chiwewe River. We will be waiting for him."
"Perhaps."
Matatu took a pinch of snuff from the doikahorn container that hung around his neck.
"Or perhaps the poachers will find him again. Or we will walk into a landmine in an old battlefield in Mozambique, or perhaps he will die of his own great age."
The thought filled Sean with melancholy. Tukutila was a part of the old Africa. Sean had been born too late fully to experience that era. He'd only been able to glimpse vestiges of it, yet he had a deep, nostalgic reverence for the history and past of his continent. It was all going so fast, trodden under the greedy rush for power by the thoughtless hordes of the emerging nations, by the unbridled tribal rivalries and the lawlessness of this new age. Once again, Africa was becoming the dark continent, but this time without the glory of its natural treasures, the wild game decimated, the forests hacked down for fuel, the very earth abused by primitive agriculture and animal husbandry, and the Saharan deserts each year marching towards southwards. Tukutila was one of the very few remaining treasures. Sean turned back. He had wanted that elephant. He had wanted him with the utmost parts of his being. Now, as he turned back into the west, the disappointment weighed down his legs and his heart, and he went heavily. A little before midnight, they found Ricardo and Claudia sleeping on a mattress of cut grass under a lean-to shelter beside a fire that had burned down to coals, while Pumula sat guard at the second fire close by. Ricardo came awake the instant Sean touched his shoulder, and he scrambled up eagerly. "Did you find him? What happened? What about the poachers?"
"He's gone, Capo, across the border. We chased off the poachers, but Tukutila got clear away,"
Sean told him, and Ricardo sagged back on the grass mattress and listened in silence while Sean described the chase and the contact with the poachers. Claudia sat close to her father, and when Sean told them how Tukutila had crossed into Mozambique, she slipped her arm round his shoulders in a gesture of comfort.
"All right," Sean stood up. "There's one of my hunting tracks that cuts through about 5 miles south of here. Matatu and I will go back to fetch the truck, and Job will lead you to the track. I'll meet you there. Should take us 4 or 5 hours."
By the light of the stars alone, Matatu led Sean for 4 hours through the forest and dense bush, bringing him at last unerringly to where the truck was parked. It was another hour's drive to the rendezvous, where they found Claudia and Ricardo and the others beside a fire on the verge of the rough track. They climbed wearily into the truck, and Sean turned back and headed towards camp. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, over 24 hours since they'd set out with such high hopes on the hunt. They drove in silence for a while, with Claudia asleep on her father's shoulder. Then Ricardo asked thoughtfully,
"Do you know where Tukutila has gone?"
"Beyond our reach, Capo," Sean told him grimly.
"Seriously?" Ricardo was impatient. "Is there one of his regular haunts where he'll be headed?"
"That's rough country in there," Sean murmured. "Chaos and confusion. Villages burned and deserted. 2 armies fighting each other with Mugabe's lads joining in."
"Where has that elephant gone?" Ricardo insisted. "He must have an established range."
Sean nodded.
"We've worked it out, Job, Matatu and I. We reckon that he holds up from July to September in the swamps below the Kabora Bassa Dam. Then in late September, or the beginning of October, he crosses the Zambezi and heads north into Malawi, into the dense rainforest around Mlanje. He hides there until after the rains break, and then comes south again, across the Zambezi near Tete, and goes back into the Chiwewe National Park again."
"So, he'll be heading for the swamps now?" Ricardo asked.
"More than likely," Sean nodded. "We get another crack at him next season, Capo."
They reached camp at dawn, and there were steaming hot showers and freshly ironed clothes ready for them, and a huge breakfast spread in the dining tent. Sean loaded crispy bacon and fried eggs onto their plates.
"When we've finished breakfast, we'll catch up on some of the sleep we missed last night. Sack out until lunchtime."
"Suits me," Claudia agreed readily.
"Then we'll have a conference. We must work out our plans for the rest of the safari. We still have almost 3 weeks. We can try for another bull elephant. I can't offer you anything like Tukutila, but we might be able to find a 60-pounder for you, Capo."
"I don't want a 60-pounder," Ricardo said.
"I want Tukutila."
"Don't we all, but let's drop it now. Sean's irritation was undisguised. We can't do anything about it. Let's just drop the subject.